This week, we examine a list of presidents who belong to various secret societies, the Freemasons, the Odd Fellows, and some others that you've likely never heard of. Then, we'll explore George Washington's various philosophies regarding Masonry and the United States. Was George Washington truly influenced to create a nation based around Masonic principles? The case seems pretty overwhelmingly in the affirmative. Then we'll even have a short piece about presidential hauntings. That's right, the founders of our great nation may be haunting their old homes and even the White House. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 555. First of all, I want to send a huge shout out to our contributors, our fellows, our producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. We've been bringing this show to you for 10 long years and have made it available to anybody who is interested in Freemasonry and its so-called kindred sciences. No small endeavor. This show requires hours of prep each week, from recording to mastering to getting our resources and communications. And not only this, but the various expenses of the podcast, hosting, websites, subscription services to make things work, all of these kinds of items are of no small cost, as I said, but thanks to all of these people, we are able to bring this to you all without stipulation. Everything is free. So we want to say thank you to them in particular. And also, I'd love to thank everybody out there who shares the program with their friends and family and anybody interested in the Royal Science. In the news, well, I'm kind of beside myself. I was super excited to go to the South Pasadena Masonic Lodge Masonic Con event for 2022. They took a break last year, and then they've made it happen this year, and it's an epic, super cool event with all kinds of amazing speakers, and I was all set up to do this moderating. My flights were all set and everything, and then life happens. So, you're listening to this on Sunday, and if you went to the South Pasadena Masonic Con Lodge's Masonic Con event, you may have thought, where's RJ? Well, I ended up not being able to go. I had a little bit of a family emergency come up, and because of this, we had to say family first in this instance, and I had to assist with some things here at home. So I do hope you all understand. I do apologize for those of you who I was looking forward to seeing and, having a drink with or a Coke or whatever. I hope to see you at an event in the future, which I know is coming up. So at the end of August, we've got MasonicCon Kansas. As far as I know, we've got no extenuating circumstances that'll stop me from being there. However, life happens sometimes. And we've also got another one that's coming up, a brand new con that I'm super excited about as well. And this is happening more toward the East Coast. What am I talking about? Well, MasonicCon South, y'all. That's right. MasonicCon South is a brand new conference that's coming up. It's going to be hosted on October 15th. So this is just after our Grand Lodge Communications here in Illinois, but I'll be down there at Greensboro Masonic Temple in Greensboro, North Carolina. They are in the process of announcing all of the speakers. However, I can tell you, as of right now, we've got Joe Martinez and myself are both speaking. But how about Brother P.D. Newman and Brother Jason Richards? Two more awesome speakers that'll be there. It's going to be a great time, you guys. I think this is the first time that they've had such an event in that area, in the North Carolina region of the United States. North Carolina is no stranger to Masonic education. And this is one of the premier states in Masonry where education is paramount. Now, I would love to say that every, Grand Lodge in the United States puts Masonic education first, but we know that isn't exactly true. We'd love it to be. We understand that every Grand Lodge has its own perspective and its own struggles and its own identity. And that's largely what drives a Grand Lodge into what it puts its most focus. I believe that MasonicCon South in North Carolina is one of those Grand Lodges that just has an eye for Masonic education. So It's going to be awesome. They're going to announce a few more speakers. I want to say one more speaker is going to be announced. There'll be six speakers. They're going to have some of the best vendors and, of course, a rad festive board. Can't have a really cool event like this without a festive board, so it's going to be cool. Tickets for the event. MasonicCon for all of the admission and the speakers, a full day of education. The lodge is asking for $75. And if you are going to have a meal, which will have the traditional Masonic festive board, guest speakers, toasts, and songs, and all of the great things that we love to do at our festive boards, super affordable, $50. So for $125, you get a whole day plus meals. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. I'm looking forward to it. And again, that's October 15th. I'm going to be adding this particular site back to our Masonic conferences website as well, which is MasonicConferences.com. I'll have links to all of this in the show notes. All right, so we're through the July 4th holiday, and July is one of these months that has a very patriotic feel. We're celebrating the Declaration of Independence, America, and its founding fathers, and everything that comes along with that. And we know that Freemasonry has played an intimate role in the formation of this great experiment. So this week, as you heard in the opener, I'm going to follow a few articles that will quench a thirst for some fascinating information relating to our founding fathers and George Washington, and even some founding fathers' paranormal hijinks. So first up, I wanted to read a short piece from the Business Insider, and the article was called 20 U.S. Presidents Who Belonged to Secret Societies. Now, as Freemasons, we all know who's likely on the list and where they fall. You know, of course, George Washington was a Freemason, and in fact, that's the first one that they talked about. But let's get into the article. I think you'll find it kind of interesting, and we might even learn a thing or two about some additional secret societies that do exist. Here we go. To the paranoid mind, it probably sounds somewhat startling that 20 out of the 45 U.S. presidents have been affiliated with some kind of secret society. Are there any movies with remotely benevolent secret orders? Most fictional secret societies are depicted as ominous and usually feature troublesome chanting, outdated robes, sacrifices, and nefarious global plots. The society's presidents have been involved with, however, function more like social clubs. Under the secret handshakes and mysterious rituals, many are just like fraternities. 14 U.S. presidents were Freemasons. Masonic lodges essentially function as a combination of social club, charitable organization, and business network. The fraternal organization has been around since at least the 1700s, likely arising from early modern organization of stonemasons. So, if I hop in here for just a moment, I don't think that we function as a business network at all. I mean, I think that's there, but it is actually a ritual society. But anyway, let's continue. Here are the presidents who have belonged to Masonic lodges or other secret societies at some point. Of course, George Washington, the secret society, the Freemasons. That's right, the first president of the United States also happened to be rather involved in a secret society. George Washington was the country's first ever Masonic president. In Ron Shenro's Washington, A Life, he notes that the future president may have been attracted to the Masonic Order's adherence to Enlightenment ideals. Washington joined the Order of Freemasons early in his life, entering Fredericksburg, Lodge No. 4, at age 20, according to Mount Vernon's official website. Masonic influences even came into play at Washington's first inauguration. During the ceremony, he swore his oath on a Bible from St. John's Masonic Lodge No. 1 in New York. The first president's Masonic ties followed him his entire life and beyond. There's even a George Washington Masonic National Memorial, which was dedicated in 1932 and finally completed in 1970. I think most of that is probably pretty clear to most Masons today. Let's talk about Thomas Jefferson. He belonged to the Flat Hat Club Society. Thomas Jefferson may have been the member of the FHC Society at the College of William and Mary, but that doesn't mean he was impressed by the group. In one 1819 letter, the third U.S. president reflected on his experience in the secret society, quote, "There existed a society called the FHC Society, confined to the number of 6 students only, of which I was a member, but it had no useful object, nor do I know whether it now exists," end quote. The initials of FHC stood for Fraternitas Humanitas et Cognito, Latin for Brotherhood, Humanity, and Knowledge. However, the group became known as the Flat Hat Club, probably reference to the mortarboard students wore at the time. Members identified themselves with a secret handshake along with a silver badge inscribed with the words Stabilitas et Fides, Stability and Faith, which is now the motto of William and Mary's campus newspaper. The group pretty much died out when the Revolutionary War interrupted classes. However, the name lived on with William and Mary's student newspaper, and the secret society itself resurged in 1972 under the name the Flat Hat Club. James Monroe, Secret Society, Freemasons. Mason website, the Masonic Trowel, lists Monroe as entering the Williamsburg Lodge, number 6 in 1776. At that time, he was 17 years old, a student at the College of William and Mary, and heavily involved in anti-crown activities on campus. He's recorded as paying dues to the lodge from 1776 to 1780, according to a comprehensive catalog of the correspondence and papers of James Monroe, Volume 1. Over the course of those 4 years, the future fifth president would drop out of college to fight in the Revolution, nearly die after getting shot during the Battle of Trenton, and then return to William and Mary to study law. Andrew Jackson, Freemasons. Jackson's status as a Mason actually became a major political issue during his presidency. In 1826, Masons were implicated in the still-unsolved kidnap of a New York man who threatened to reveal their secrets. An anti-Masonic political party formed shortly after, claiming Masons were sinister, elitist, and anti-democratic. Slate reported. The anti-Masonic party found a natural foe in Jackson, who was not only a Mason, but a high-ranked one. Jackson served as the Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Tennessee from 1822 to 1824. James K. Polk. According to the Proceedings of the Grand Lodge of Kentucky, the 11th president was initiated in Columbia Lodge, number 31, Columbia, Tennessee, in 1820. He was 25 at the time and had just been licensed to practice law. James Buchanan, also Freemason. According to the Complete Idiot's Guide to Freemasonry, Buchanan was a member of Lodge number 43 in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and he later went on to become one of the worst-ranked presidents in U.S. history. Andrew Johnson, Freemason. In her biography on Johnson, historian Annette Gordon Reed says that former president remained a proud Mason throughout his life, and that local Masonic temples played a great role in his funeral proceedings. Ulysses S. Grant, the Independent Order of Oddfellows. 18th president and famed United General Ulysses S. Grant belonged to a society known as the Independent Order of Oddfellows. The fraternal order has its roots in early modern Europe and was an offshoot of England's Oddfellows. The American version of the organization was officially founded in 1819 in Baltimore. The order focused on charitable causes and eventually admitted both men and women as members. According to the general's wife, the life of Mrs. Ulysses S. Grant, Grant joined the order after his wife became pregnant with their second child. The papers of U.S. Grant feature an invitation from the order asking then-President Grant to attend its 50th anniversary celebration in Philadelphia in 1869. James Garfield, member of the Freemasons. Garfield only served a few months of his presidency before being assassinated. He had a lengthier tenure in the Freemasons. According to the Proceedings of the Grand Lodge of Kentucky, he was initiated into Magnolia Lodge No. 20 in Columbus, Ohio in 1861, and went on to receive the Capitular and Templar degrees and those of the Lodge of Perfection in the Scottish Rite. Rutherford B. Hayes, a member of the Independent Order of Oddfellows. A list of Hayes' speeches shows that the 19th president spoke to gatherings of Oddfellows 5 times, from 1850 to 1887. In his 1887 speech in Fremont, Ohio, where he ushered in the appointment of new Oddfellow officers, Hayes discussed his own feelings about the order and other societies like it. Quote, "The beneficial societies, commonly known as secret societies, in fact, they are secret chiefly in name and secret only to guard against imposture, gather under the same friendly roof, in close intimacy, persons differing widely in occupation, politics, religion, and conditions of life, and fuse them easily and naturally into complete harmony and cordial friendship." End quote. William McKinley, the Freemasons and the Independent Order of Oddfellows. McKinley succeeded Garfield as both the next Masonic president and the next president to be assassinated. Roadside America features a post documenting the site where McKinley was first initiated as a Mason while fighting for the Union during the Civil War. His Masonic legacy lives on today, as the lodge he once belonged to is now named after him. McKinley also belonged to the Oddfellows, like Hayes and Grant. Theodore Roosevelt, Freemasons, and the Concatenated Order of Hoo-Hoo. The Theodore Roosevelt Center has digitized many of the 26th President's letters, some of which reference his Masonic activities. President Roosevelt addressed the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania in 1902 on the anniversary of Washington's initiation. In his speech, he reflected on some of his own reasons for joining the Freemasons. Quote, "One of the things that attracted me so greatly to Masonry that I hailed the chance of becoming a Mason was that it really did act up to what we, as a government and as a people, are pledged to, of treating each man on his merits as a man. When Brother George Washington went into a lodge of the fraternity, he went into the one place in the United States where he stood below or above his fellows according to their official position in the lodge. He went into the place where the idea of our government was realized as far as it is humanly possible for mankind to realize a lofty idea." End quote. However, Roosevelt also ran into an occasional snag with the society. In his letter, he chastised one alleged Mason for attempting to use his position in the society for political advantage, which is against the rules of Freemasonry, and complained about another situation in a letter to a friend, writing one foe was, quote-unquote, endeavoring to use Masonry to my political disadvantage, end quote. After his presidency, Roosevelt wrote about traveling the world and visiting Masonic lodges in Nairobi and the Azores. Roosevelt wasn't just a Mason, however. He also belonged to the comparatively obscure International Concatenated Order of Hoo-Hoo. As Forest History Society blogger Amanda T. Ross writes, "The Hoo-Hoos resemble less an exclusive secret society and more a business fraternity. It was a fraternal organization for men in the lumber industry and boasted Theodore Roosevelt as one of its most famous members due to his conservation work." William Howard Taft, Freemasons and Skull and Bones. Taft probably found entrance into Skull and Bones rather easily. His father, former Attorney General Alfonso Taft, co-founded Skull and Bones as a Yale student in 1832. Taft later became a Mason in 1909, about a month before his inauguration. The 1912 record book, Proceedings of the Grand Lodge of Free and Accepted Masons of the State of New York, mentions that Taft, as president of the greatest and mightiest republic of the world, was applying Masonic principles in his attempt to handle world affairs. Warren Harding, Freemasons, Independent Order of Oddfellows, and Concatenated Order of Hoo-Hoo. Harding, the 29th president, was a member of three secret societies already mentioned on the list. He was first initiated as an entered apprentice with the Masons on June 28, 1901, in Marion Lodge No. 70 in Marion, Ohio. He wasn't officially declared a Master Mason for another 19 years. The timing of his acceptance just happened to coincide with Harding's presidential campaign and subsequent victory. A paper by Mason and researcher John R. Tester details Harding's long-thwarted quest to rise within the secret fraternal society. Tester theorizes that the reasons for Harding's delayed promotion may have been due to political prejudices or rumors about his black ancestry. Most Masonic lodges refused at the time to admit African Americans for much of U.S. history. Harding seemed to have an easier time as a member of the Independent Order of Oddfellows. A 1921 edition of the Chicago Lumberman also lists Harding as being a member of the Concatenated Order of Hoo-Hoo. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Freemasons, Independent Order of Oddfellows. Roosevelt was first initiated as Mason in 1911. The Franklin D. Roosevelt Library and Museum's official blog features several historical materials pertaining to the three-term president's participation in the society. One excerpt from a 1935 press conference features Roosevelt's account of a Mason-related prank he pulled on the then Securities and Exchange Commission chairman Joseph Kennedy, the father of future President John F. Kennedy. The day after the press conference, Roosevelt conducted a ceremony initiating his two sons at the Architect Lodge. Afterwards, the president gave a speech praising the society. Quote, To me, the ceremonies of Freemasonry in this state of ours, especially these later ones that I have taken part in, always make me wish that more Americans in every part of our land could become connected with our fraternity." End quote. But the Masonic Order wasn't the only secret club that FDR was a member of. He also belonged to the Independent Order of Oddfellows, as Houstonia magazine reported. Harry Truman, Freemason and Oddfellow. Truman was very involved with the Freemasons. In fact, the 33rd president helped found a Masonic lodge in Belton, Missouri in 1911, and was elected its first master, according to the Truman Library. Apparently, Truman's lodge hall burned down while he was serving in World War I, but he continued to rise within the Freemasons throughout the 1920s. The Truman Library cited one observer's assessment of Truman's leadership ability in the society at the time. Quote, "He did a good job in the lodge work. He was a good lodge man." End quote. Later, during his presidency, he remained a committed Mason. The New York Times reported that Truman's only jewelry was a double-band gold Masonic ring on the little finger of his left hand. The Truman Library also reports that in 1945, Truman became the only president to receive the 33rd degree of the Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite. He is also said to have been a member of the Oddfellows, although this isn't nearly as documented. Richard Nixon, Secret Society, the Order of the Red Friars. Founded in 1913, the Order of the Red Friars was a semi-secret society at Duke University. New members were initiated or tapped by a member of the order, donned in a red hood and robe. The society was apparently invested in improving life on campus. There's not much information about what Nixon did as a member of the order, but Duke University's library lists him as a member. The order voluntarily disbanded in 1971, only a year before the Watergate burglary set a series of events in motion that would unravel Nixon's presidency. Gerald Ford, Freemasons. So far, Gerald Ford has been the last known Masonic president. He was initiated into the order in 1949 in Columbia Lodge No. 3 in Washington, D.C. That same year, Ford actually helped preside over the unveiling of the Masonic Memorial honoring George Washington. Ford's speech at the event, which was later published in his public papers, featured some reflections on his own Masonic journey. Quote, "When I took my obligation as a Master Mason, incidentally, with my three younger brothers, I recalled the value my own father attached to that order, but I had no idea that I would ever be added to the company of the father of our country and 12 other members of the order who also served as presidents of the United States. Masonic principles, internal, not external, and our order's vision of duty to country and acceptance of God as supreme being and a guiding light have sustained me during my years of government service." George H.W. Bush, Skull and Bones. Before George H.W. Bush became the second Bonesman to occupy the Oval Office, he was also a pilot in World War II and served as an ambassador to Communist China, director of the CIA, and vice president to Ronald Reagan. As president during the end of the Cold War, Bush supported space exploration. The American people have also criticized and exalted his involvement in the Gulf War, notably Operation Desert Storm. George W. Bush, Skull and Bones. Bush's family name had become synonymous with Skull and Bones by the time he arrived on Yale's campus. There were rumors that Bush almost missed getting tapped by the group, but he ended up becoming the third Bonesman to become president. My senior year, quote, "I joined Skull and Bones, a secret society so secret I can't say anything more," Bush wrote in his 1999 autobiography, A Charge to Keep. Bush, however, carries a certain disdain for Yale's brand of East Coast elitism, as The Atlantic points out. Well, there you have a brief overview of several U.S. presidents who belong to secret societies, one after the next. It was just Freemason, 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 Oddfellows, Skull and Bones, and then this Hoo-Hoo Order and the Scarlet Robe or Red Robe Society. Just kind of interesting. Seems like the Freemasons won the lottery there for the presidents. I'll have a link back to this article, which also has links to all of their citations in the article as well. For the Craftsman Plus, I would be curious to know what's the weirdest secret society that you've ever heard of. Just tell us the name of it and maybe post a link to some information about it. We can get a little conspiratorial. Have fun with it. Next, I have a piece that comes from George Washington, the Mount Vernon.org. and it's called 8 Facts About George Washington and Religion. I felt this piece was appropriate since we're always hearing about George Washington and how great he was, but sometimes we don't always get all of the cool nuances and facts. And so, in an effort to get to know the man a little bit more, let's check out these 8 facts about George Washington and religion from MountVernon.org. Much has been written about George Washington and his religious beliefs. Some even go so far as to suggest he did not believe in a god, while others believe he was a deist. 1. While rather private about his religious beliefs, George Washington was an Anglican. The Washingtons attended services about once a month at 2 churches near Mount Vernon. During the Revolutionary War, Washington regularly attended services held by military chaplains and local civilian congregations. Often, when he was traveling, Washington would stop for services at whatever church was nearby, regardless of its denomination. Over the course of his life, he is known to have attended services at churches associated with the following Christian groups: Presbyterians, Quakers, Roman Catholics, Congregationalists, Baptists, and Dutch Reformed. Throughout his time as a leader in the army and civilian government, Washington encouraged the declaration of days of prayer and fasting as a means of seeking divine assistance in perilous situations, and also supported the proclamation of days of thanksgiving to praise God for his help. He and his other officers led church services during the French and Indian War because they lacked chaplains. During the Revolution, he ensured that there were chaplains of various denominations to meet the spiritual needs of his soldiers. He also encouraged them to stop swearing and gambling because he told them it was unseemly to ask God's favor of their efforts if they were constantly insulting him by their behavior. Number 2. Washington intended religious freedom in the United States to apply to all religions. Shortly after his inauguration as president, religious communities began writing to Washington. He told these groups that the only being to whom Americans owed an explanation of their religious beliefs was God. When the Virginia Baptists wrote about their qualms that the new Constitution did not specifically guarantee freedom of religion, they went on to say that they knew they were in good hands with Washington at the head of the government. The president responded that he would never have signed the Constitution if he thought it would endanger the religious rights of any group. There are some who believe that Washington was only speaking of religious freedom in regard to Christian denominations, but did not intend it to apply to other religions. To a Jewish congregation in Rhode Island, he noted that, quote, "It is now no more that toleration is spoken of, as if it was by the indulgence of one class of people that another enjoyed the exercise of their inherent natural rights. For happily, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens in giving it, on all occasions, their effectual support." Number 3. The Washington Family Bible contained a record of George Washington's birth. He was born, quote, "about 10 in the morning on February 11, 1731 or 32, according to the Julian calendar then in use. When England adopted the Gregorian calendar in 1752, which we still observe today, this date changed to February 22, 1732, the day Washington considered to be his birthday. Number 4. George Washington was chosen as a vestryman and churchwarden. Washington served as a vestryman at Truro Parish between 1762 and 1784. He was also chosen by his fellow vestrymen to act as churchwarden for 3 terms. The activities of each Anglican parish in Virginia during the 18th century were overseen by a minister and a group of 12 gentlemen, known as the vestry. These men were responsible for levying taxes to pay the minister's salary and church budget, as well as upkeep and construction of church property, and care for the poor in the community. On a rotation basis, 2 of the vestrymen were typically asked to take on the position of churchwarden. It was these men who were responsible for the day-to-day hands-on work of the parish. Number 5. George Washington expressed little preference as to the religion practiced by the enslaved workers at Mount Vernon. Religion offered comfort to those facing a life of bondage. Some enslaved people were Christian. they may have encountered Quakers, Baptists, and Methodists in their local area. Caesar, an enslaved field worker at Union Farm, was also a minister who preached to local black communities. Some enslaved people may have continued African religion traditions or blended a variety of spiritual beliefs into their daily lives. Number 6. While at Mount Vernon, George and Martha Washington worshipped at Christ Church in Alexandria and Pohick Church in Truro Parish. Christ Church was about 10 miles from Mount Vernon, whereas Truro Parish was only 7 miles away. The Washingtons took a part in establishing Pohick Church. The Washington family maintained pews in both churches, however. Attendance at either church required a roughly 1.5 to 2 hour trip by horseback or coach each way. A scholar who closely examined Washington's diaries for evidence of church-going found that he typically attended an average of one Sunday per month, a frequency dictated in Virginia society by both custom and the law prior to the Revolution. 7. George Washington purchased a Bible for Martha Washington in New York on August 18th, 1789. Martha signed her name on several of the pages. This Bible contains 6 fold-out maps and nearly 300 copperplate engravings executed by John Sturt. It is also filled with family history, including the record of the marriage of Nellie Custis to Lawrence Lewis, and birth records of their 8 children. There are also newspaper clippings of obituaries for Eleanor Park Curtis, M.E. Angela Conrad, and Lawrence Lewis. Number 8. George Washington was a member of the Freemasons. Washington entered the Order of Freemasons October 1752 at the age of 20. Upon joining the Fredericksburg Lodge No. 4 in Fredericksburg, Virginia, Washington became a member alongside a number of influential Virginians. In 1783, at the close of the Revolutionary War, a Masonic Lodge in Alexandria, Virginia was chartered. The new lodge asked General Washington to be its first master. Washington accepted the position and became master of the newly formed Alexandria Lodge No. 22. So there you have some interesting facts about George Washington, things that you might not have read before. I did not know about the abundance of the different denominations of churches that he frequently attended. Also, I found it interesting that it was law prior to the Revolutionary War to attend church the way he had been doing. So pretty interesting. Next up, I wanted to read a little bit about something different. What about paranormal and the Founding Fathers? From the Association of Paranormal Study comes this short piece called Ghost Stories of the Founding Fathers. Another 4th of July has come and gone. Every year, I can't help but think of the ghosts of the Patriots who still reside with us. While their physical bodies are gone, their spirits live on in this country they created through blood, sweat, and tears. Could it be that these Founding Fathers are still with us, even after death? After all, they risked and sacrificed their lives, the lives of their loved ones, and everything they knew once they signed their names on the Declaration of Independence. Perhaps the United States is truly their baby, and the Founding Fathers are staying here, keeping a watchful eye on the nation they made. Since our article on the haunting of Alexander Hamilton was such a hit, here are more stories of hauntings by the Founding Fathers and their family members. John Adams. John Adams had quite the shoes to fill when he became the 2nd president of the United States. He and his wife Abigail were the first residents to move into the White House at the end of the 18th century. While John Adams's ghost seems to be laying low, Abigail has been seen roaming the halls of the White House. She's usually wearing a cap and a lace shawl while carrying laundry. I certainly hope this is more of a residual haunting, because the thought of doing laundry for the rest of my afterlife would be my personal version of hell. James Monroe. James Monroe was the 5th president of the United States. He was popular but also unassuming. His most prized estate was Highland, which wasn't too far from the famous Monticello. However, Monroe fell on hard times and had to give up Highland. He then moved to New York to be with his daughter and her family, where he eventually died. First, he would be buried in the family crypt. Then, his body would be moved to the Hollywood Cemetery in Richmond, Virginia. It is there that Monroe has been seen near his gravestone, rubbing his shoulder, which is where he took a musket ball during the Revolutionary War. Patrick Henry. Here is another ghost story that involves the Founding Father's spouse. In 1754, Patrick Henry married Sarah Henry. In 1771, they moved to Scotchtown, Virginia, to a plantation. After they moved in, Sarah had the couple's sixth child. However, it seemed she suffered from extreme postpartum depression. Sadly, the only hospital that would accept mentally ill patients had deplorable conditions, and Patrick wouldn't subject his wife to that place. So she was kept at Scotchtown. Sarah became so determined to harm herself that she had to wear a straight dress, much similar to a straight jacket. She was also moved to the basement and locked in two rooms. Sarah eventually died in 1775 and buried with an unmarked grave on the property, per the tradition of mentally ill patients. It is said that her spirit still resides at Scotchtown. Screams can be heard from the basement, and items have been moved. People have reported seeing a woman wearing a long white dress coming from the basement. Candles have also been lit at night while the home was empty. Betsy Ross. While technically not a founding father, Betsy Ross was one of the most important female figures while America was fighting for independence. You could say she helped stitch it all together. Legend has it that she haunts her former homestead, and her ghost is often seen crying at the foot of her old bed. Betsy is also buried on the premises. James Madison. James Madison was the fourth president of the United States, and his wife, Dolly, planted the roses that still grow in the White House garden today. Legend has it that Dolly still haunts the grounds, checking in on her beloved roses. If you mess with Mrs. Madison's roses, it is said that she will retaliate. When first Lady Edith Wilson, the wife of Woodrow Wilson, tried to have the garden, workers saw the apparition of Dolly, and she was very angry. Needless to say, the workers quit and never returned. Don't mess with a woman's roses. Benjamin Franklin. If Benjamin Franklin had his way, the turkey would have been our national bird, and we would have had to find an alternative poultry for Thanksgiving. He was one of the most pivotal founding fathers who helped establish the foundation for the United States. Most of his important work took place in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is why it is no surprise that Franklin's ghost has mainly been seen in the area as opposed to his hometown of Boston. He has been known to haunt the Philadelphia Philosophical Society, with one instance reported in 1884 when he knocked down a cleaning lady while she was in the library. The society is over 200 years old and is located near Independence Hall. It has also been rumored that the society's statue of Franklin has been seen dancing in the streets. Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson was the third president of the United States and the primary author of the Declaration of Independence. He was one of the core founding fathers. However, Jefferson always longed to be home at Monticello. Even in retirement, he was always called upon. He had to install special shutters for his first floor office so that onlookers couldn't spy on him. Unsurprisingly, he haunts his homestead of Monticello, which means little mountain. He has been seen among tourists as they walk through his home. He has been heard whistling tunes of his time, which was something he did while he was alive. Jefferson is also reported to haunt the most important place for a U.S. president, the White House. Legend has it that Thomas Jefferson can be heard playing his violin in the yellow oval room. George Washington. Our very first president, George Washington, has a few stories surrounding his ghost. Perhaps one of the most fascinating stories is the fact that his ghost appeared during the Civil War in support of the Union. As the 20th Maine was approaching Gettysburg, Washington's ghost appeared when they got to a fork in the road. The regiment was unsure which direction to go when a tall, imposing figure wearing a tri-cornered hat on horseback appeared and pointed them in the right direction towards Little Round Top, where they became famous for their bayonets charge. Not only that, but the ghost also told the group to follow him. Legend has it that it was Washington's ghost who led that infamous charge. To this day, it is said that Washington's ghost rides across Gettysburg Battlefield on his white steed. Finally, Washington is reported to haunt his beloved homestead, Mount Vernon. His remains are also buried on the premises. He has been seen on his deathbed and in his bedroom, and his bedroom is considered to be a hotspot for paranormal activity. Well, there you have some interesting ghost stories, if you will, of some of the founding fathers and their wives, even. Pretty interesting. I had never heard this story about Washington at Gettysburg. That sounds just wild to me. However, there's an additional article that tells a larger story, and if you follow the link in the show notes, you'll find that for your further edification. For our Craftsman Plus, what do you think about ghosts? You know, I think this is a really fascinating topic. You know, it's not so much Masonic, but just as a general interest, do you have any ghost stories regarding Freemasons? I'd love to read all about it. That's it for this week. I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for helping to bring this show to the masses for over 10 years. Every piece of help is definitely appreciated. I cannot express my gratitude to you enough. Remember to check out all the links in the show notes for the various things that we talked about. And until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
That's it. Okay, you're up.